Chapter 35. New Year's. The week ticked by too quickly, in a blur of snowball fights, card games, and chess on Ron's new board, both indoors and out, using Ron's pieces at sizes up to a foot tall. The pieces visibly changed with every game, edges softening and running like melted wax, where before they had been rough-hewn and blocky, and the only human pieces had been the hook-nosed, frowning king and queen. Now they were becoming fluidly humanoid shapes, except for the pawns. The evergreen garlands festooning the great hall and several main areas of the castle, including the library and common rooms, were changing as well. Bamboo stalks, straw, and fern leaves appeared, woven in them. Sometimes between meals, sometimes, as in the case of the Gryffindor common room, overnight. When Hermione asked, Yusuke said they were New Year's decorations. On Friday, a new centerpiece appeared on the students' and teachers' tables. Two flattened, white rounds of cake, stacked one on top of the other, displayed on a wooden block and topped with a tangerine. Keiko blocked an overcurious second-year student's reaching hand and explained that this was kagamimochi, another New Year's decoration, and wasn't to be eaten until after the New Year. On Saturday, Harry caught Yusuke making his bed and Kuwabara reorganizing his trunk. Their charms translated their explanation to spring cleaning, but Harry was fairly sure this was less than accurate. On Saturday, dinner was strange dishes of pasta in a soupy broth, topped with a raw egg and a slice of something rectangular and white, and bowls of soup with a whitish, sticky pastry in the bottom. The Tante dug in eagerly, but the Hogwarts students stared at their food in mixed curiosity and trepidation. Hermione tried hers first. "It's sort of fishy," she said of the pasta. Ron made a face. He didn't like fish. Harry stirred the soup with his strangely ladle-like spoon. Slices of mushrooms, carrots, and something leaf green, and something circular and white, floated in the clear broth. He screwed up his Gryffindor courage and took a sip. Fishy, just like Hermione had said, but not too bad. He tried some more, and with the appetite of a teenage boy backing him up, soon was barely managing to keep from slurping. Across the table, Ron pulled one of the larger serving bowls towards him. It was filled with round, dark beans, and he popped one into his mouth and chewed. "It's okay," he mumbled to himself, and poured a quarter of the bowl onto his plate. He drizzled soy sauce over his rice, mixed it all together, and used the funny ladle spoon to scoop the resulting mixture into his mouth. The Tante stared at him in horror. "What?" he mumbled, barely intelligible around the spoon. "You're impossible, Ron," Hermione sighed. "I was incorrigible yesterday," Ron muttered. "Make up your mind." Keiko, Kuwabara, and Yusuke shuddered and went back to their meal in silence. The others managed not to shudder, but their eyes skittered past Ron rather than falling on him through the rest of the meal. Harry reached for seconds on the soup as Dumbledore stood. McGonagall tapped her spoon against her water glass, ringing for quiet. "Before we leave this unusual yet excellent repast," Dumbledore began, "I have an announcement. As there are so few students staying this year, tonight all students will be allowed to visit Hogsmeade to ring in the new year." Cheers erupted in the Great Hall, led by Yusuke, Kuwabara, and Ron. Dumbledore waited a beat for the noise to quiet. "Your professors will be going along, of course." Surprisingly, no one groaned at this. "And I must ask that no one wanders off alone while in town." Another lack of complaint, and Dumbledore smiled. "We will meet in the courtyard at 8:15. Dress for the occasion. It is a holiday, after all." He sat, and the hall broke out into excited murmuring. Botan suddenly stood, yelping as she stared at her watch. "We only have 2 hours to get ready!" Keiko and Eukina scrambled off their benches, as did most of the other girls. "I'll see you at 8, then," Hermione said, As she got up more calmly from her own bench, she strode from the great hall, leaving it empty of girls. The boys glanced at each other. "Guess it's universal, how long it takes for girls to get ready," Ron said cheerfully into the silence. "Actually," Kurama murmured, "we should leave too, if we want to bathe properly before we dress," he said to Hiei, standing. Hiei flicked a cool glance at Kurama. "Why?" he asked. If Harry hadn't lived with him for several months, he wouldn't have recognized the tone of non-hostile curiosity. "It'll take 2 seconds to dress."
"You're wearing kimono,"
Kurama replied. "Kimono?" Harry thought. "Like Yukina's? Those bright dresses and sashes and huge bows?" The idea was ridiculous. Harry couldn't even try to picture it. "I didn't bring any," Hiei said, a sliver of irritation creeping into his voice. It didn't sway Kurama.
"I did."
Rolling his eyes, Hiei allowed Kurama to pull him from the bench. The group took that as their cue to leave, and stood as well. Harry grabbed a cupcake. "Normal food!" As they trickled from the room in ones and twos in Kurama and Hiei's wake. Upon reaching the moving staircases, the two split ways, Hiei heading upstairs, Kurama down.
"Up right after my bath,"
Harry heard Kurama saying, as he and Ron reached them.
"Don't lock me out, please."
Nearly an hour and a half later, Harry and Ron wandered back up to the dorm and discovered that, no, Hiei had not locked Kurama out. The two of them were in the small bit of open space in the room near Hiei's bed, where squares of neatly folded clothing sat. Hiei himself stood, wearing a light brown kimono that came to his knees. A painted dragon coiled across the back. The thick collar was dark blue. Kurama stood before him, already fully dressed in a warm brown kimono and some sort of odd striped skirt. At least, that's what the pleating thing looked like to Harry. His hair was still slightly damp from the bath.
"What's he doing here?" Ron blurted instinctively.
Kurama looked up, unoffended.
"Helping Hiei dress," he answered.
And indeed, as Harry watched, Kurama reached for the bed. He took a wide waistband from it, looping it around Hiei's waist and tying it in place.
"You can't do it yourself?" Harry asked.
"It was just a robe, right? Simple matter of pulling it on and tying it closed."
"Well, you can," Kurama said, smoothing Hiei's collar. "But it's easier not to. My mother usually helps me."
He took a strip of brown cloth from the bed and laid it on Hiei's collar, then stood to grab a dark blue robe. Harry realized both Tante were wearing a strange, split-toed type of white sock.
"There's no room for sloppiness in wearing kimono," Hiei said flatly, grumpily,
as Kurama gently shook out the plain blue robe and held it open for Hiei to push his arms into. This robe reached his ankles. Kurama stepped back around to Hiei's front and pulled at the front panels of the outer robe, carefully aligning them.
"Hold,"
he said, and Hiei's hands covered Kurama's, replacing them and holding the kimono in place under the wide waistband. Kurama checked the strip of brown at the collar, lining it up as if it should be attached to the inside of the outer kimono's collar. He then threaded another, thinner waistband between Hiei's arms and tied it closed around his waist. Harry turned away, opening his trunk and digging his dress robes out, as Ron buttoned the collar of his own, cinnamon brown, no lace or mold, robes closed and headed for the bathrooms with his hairbrush. Western robes needed only to be pulled over one's head, and in Harry's case, the cuffs buttoned. Much smarter and easier than all of this inner robe, outer robe, waistbands and collars and precise lining up weirdness, in Harry's opinion. And that didn't even include the stripy skirt thing Kurama was wearing. He turned, intending to get his brush, and saw Kurama kneeling, shaking out a blue-striped skirt thing for Hiei to step into.
Blech!
The door burst open,
thudding against the wall, and Yusuke rushed in, still in jeans and a sweater. Hiei didn't bother to glance at him, but Kurama froze.
Yusuke, you aren't even... We only have 15 minutes before we have to go.
No problem, Yusuke said. Genkai showed us this charm.
You're terrible in charms.
Yusuke grinned. Just watch, he said smugly, lifting his wand.
Kurama edged closer to Hiei, away from him.
Koso de sho.
Yusuke's trunk banged open, black and white robes flying out. They shook themselves free of their folding and spun about Yusuke, hiding him from view. A yelp, and his jeans and sweater flung themselves from the whirling mass of cloth, which shrank and tightened until, with an outward blast of air that made Harry's eyes water, Yusuke was revealed again, his hair slightly mussed and wobbling.
Whoa, he muttered, putting a hand to his head dizzily.
Kurama burst into an uncontrollable fit of snickering, burying his face against Hiei's chest.
What? Yusuke asked. Kurama just pointed at him helplessly, shaking with laughter.
Hiei glanced at Yusuke and snorted with amusement before he could suppress his reaction.
What?
Your kimono, Kurama managed. Yusuke looked down at himself, and Harry looked too. Nothing wrong with Yusuke's robes. They looked just like Kurama's except for the color. What was so funny?
Your kimono, Hiei said, smirking. Says you're dead, Yusuke.
Eh? Yusuke looked down at himself again, tracing the collar down to his belt.
It does! Damn it!
I told you were terrible in charms, Kurama said, voice muffled, but his laughter under control. You should have had Genkai or Kuwabara cast it.
My kimono was up here, Yusuke grumbled, glancing between himself and the clock. I hate wearing these things.
Kurama leaned back, working on tying Hiei's skirt thing, carefully and pointedly not looking at Yusuke again.
Well, you could either ask for help, Yusuke coughed, and it sounded suspiciously like, "Yeah, right."
Recast the charm and hope you don't make it worse, or just ignore the fact that you're dressed like a corpse.
Harry shuddered. That was a morbid and disgusting idea.
Picky, picky, Yusuke muttered.
How badly would I spook the girls if I did the last one?
Votan would probably be laughing too hard to walk, Kurama answered smoothly, standing. All done.
Hmm,
Hiei said, and Harry recognized it as a sort of thanks. Kurama pushed two very short robes, coats, aside and sat on Hiei's bed. Hiei clambered up behind him with a hairbrush.
Why does Yusuke's kimono say he's dead? Harry asked.
The three of them blinked at him as if they'd almost forgotten he was there. Yusuke turned so Harry could see him and Kurama clearly. Kurama traced a finger along a line of blue at his collar, the strip of cloth in the same place as Hiei's brown one, then pointed at Yusuke. It's here. Yusuke has the wrong flap of the kimono on the outside. Harry looked more carefully. The thin line of color, white on Yusuke, blue on Kurama, crossed from the shoulder to belt in opposite directions on them.
That's it?
It's extremely important.
Right.
Ron appeared at the door, tossing his brush vaguely in the direction of his bed. It missed, as the clock chimed.
Miney's gonna lecture us again if we're late.
The Tante slipped their feet into sandals. Harry dropped his brush on his bed. They all grabbed their coats and cloaks, and they followed Ron downstairs. Hermione waited in the common room, along with the little third-year girl who was the only other Gryffindor remaining at Hogwarts.
It's about time, she said, whirling on them. And to think girls are supposed to take forever.
You look very nice tonight, Hermione, Ron said quickly, as if he'd been practicing the sentence since the Yule Ball last year.
Hermione beamed.
Her hair was piled sleekly on top of her head, caught with a pin that was of no Western make, her Christmas gift from Tante.
charmed so that she didn't have to so much as brush her hair before putting it in. Harry was sure she was wearing makeup. She had at the ball, after all, though he couldn't tell how it made any difference. Her robes were a grayish violet, long-sleeved and considerably warmer looking than the pale blue thing she'd worn to the ball. Unlike the Tante boys, she was sensibly wearing boots. "Okay, can we quit the mushy crap?" Yusuke asked. "Keiko's as bad as Hermione about being on time." Hiei shoved past them, opened the portrait hole, and left, Kurama in his wake. Harry and the others turned to follow. "What's that?" Hermione asked, as the Gryffindors and Kurama left the moving staircases. Hiei glanced at her, then to where she was pointing, to the barely visible inner lining of his Haori coat. He hadn't actually looked at the picture yet. "I don't know," he answered, shifting his grip on the silk garment, opening it to see inside. A painting of part of a Japanese shrine, the buildings and scenery strangely familiar, stretched seamlessly inside the upper back of the coat. It took half a moment to place the image, and when it did, he blinked in surprise. "Hiei? What? It's the shrine at Mount Hiei." In retrospect, he really shouldn't be startled. The kimono had been bought, if it hadn't been stolen, by Kurama, after all. And after the dragon on the under kimono, well, it probably amused Kurama to scatter clues. It certainly amused him to make things needlessly complicated. "You're named after a mountain?" Hermione repeated, incredulous. "You have a shrine?" "Yes," Hiei replied flatly. Kurama's complications struck again. "I'm named after a mountain. So is Kurama. I think. I don't actually know if Kurama was born before or after the mountain was named. Do I?" "And no, we do not have shrines." "Oh." A pause. "It's beautiful." Hiei grunted. That didn't warrant a response. A tiny cluster of four stood just inside the entrance to the courtyard, staring out at the snow. Kuwabara towered in black and white over the Tante girls, who were all in the bright dresses and wide sashes Harry had expected from the word kimono. All had sleeves far longer than Yukina's usual day wear, coming down nearly to the ankle. Yukina wore pale green with a design of trees, and a deep purple obi tied in a neat bow at her back. Botan was in white, stylized deep blue clouds and bright little flowers all over. Her obi was blue, in a larger and deliberately tilted bow. Keiko wore deep red with a design of multicolored oranges and a gold obi. "Gryffindor colors?" Hermione asked. "Did you do that on purpose?" Keiko turned away from the courtyard, shaking her head. "No, this was my mother's." "Was?" Harry thought, but Keiko continued. "She gave it to me last New Year's." She looked past Hermione. "It's a miracle. Yusuke isn't late." "Oi!" Yusuke protested. "You'd be late to your own funeral, I bet," Botan said slyly, peering past Keiko, who elbowed her rudely. Botan ignored this, staring at Yusuke. Then she burst into laughter. Everybody turned to stare. "Not you too," Yusuke groaned. "Told you," Kurama said. He looked away innocently when Yusuke growled at him. Yukina pulled a fan from her obi, flicking it open to hide her face, but she didn't manage to hide the distress in her eyes as she stared at Yusuke. "Yeah, yeah, I've already heard it. Let's just all laugh at the guy who sucks at charms. Ha ha. Get an eyeful already and get over it." Botan tried, and failed, to get her laugh under control, as Keiko looked blankly between the blue-haired girl and Yusuke. On her third glance, she did a double take. "Yusuke? What kind of sick joke are you pulling?" Yusuke raised his hands defensively. "It was an accident, I swear." "I'll swear you, dressing like a corpse, as if we need to be reminded of last year." She yanked a fan from her obi and began swatting him over the head with it. You are so inconsiderate! Ron leaned over to Kurama. What happened last year? He asked, just loud enough to be heard by Harry and Hermione as well. He was hit by a car, Kurama replied, at the same volume. They thought he was dead. In fact, he very nearly was. He spent, I think it was 2 months in a coma, and nearly died again during that time when the building he was in burnt down. Bloody hell, Ron breathed. Rough luck, isn't it? Kurama replied. Upon reaching Hogsmeade, which looked far different in the dark, the professors led them to the main square, bright with fairy lights. Now then, before anybody leaves, Mr. Urameshi, McGonagall said, her voice raising to stop the Gryffindor in his tracks, we must remind you that this is a chaperoned evening. No students are to go wandering off on their own. Please stay in groups of at least four, if you are not accompanied by an adult. Students groaned. Everyone is to meet at the Three Broomsticks by 11:30. Should you hear the bells at Hogwarts ringing, you are late. Dumbledore smiled at the cluster of students and teachers, eyes twinkling. All of your professors have put off several holiday errands to visit the various shops tonight. Should you wish to go as well? I myself will be visiting Honeydukes, Zonko's, and the bookstore. McGonagall took her cue. I will be visiting the post office, Shrivenshafts, and retiring to the Three Broomsticks early. Dervish and Bangs, and then the Quidditch shop, Madam Hooch said. One by one, the other teachers listed where they would be. Presumably the few who didn't, like Snape, planned to walk the streets in case a student did try to wander alone. Then the group began to break up. The youngest students darted straight to Dumbledore, while the older students hung back. Decisions, decisions, Ron murmured, half seriously. Do we go for candy and jokes and suffer books? Sit around while Hooch gets her repairs done and then get to the Quidditch shop? Or grab one more person and get a group of four? One more person, Harry answered, his gaze moving swiftly over the crowd. Kuwabara carefully lifted Yukina from Botan's oar, where the sandal-wearing Tante girls had ridden down from the castle, setting her gallantly on his shoulder. He had to lift his arm to make the perch wide enough, raising his hand so she could catch it for balance. Yusuke and Keiko were arguing in whispers already, sharp gestures telegraphing the disagreement. Keiko apparently refused to walk in the snow, which was only smart considering her feet would freeze in those sandals, and Yusuke refused to carry her, to which she seemed to be replying that there was no way she would allow herself to be carried the way Yukina was, which, again, was only smart since she and Yusuke were far closer in size and weight than Kuwabara and Yukina. Yusuke would drop her if he tried. The Ravenclaws were as impossible as Hermione about books. They'd never escape the bookstore. The Hufflepuffs? Already queued up with the professors. Which left only two possibilities. Harry glanced over the crowd again and blinked. Guys, where are Hiei and Kurama? At that moment, Hiei was high in the trees north of Hogsmeade, following an elusive flicker of silver in the underbrush below. It wasn't that he didn't trust Kurama not to do something completely stupid while he was out here, but Hiei had only gotten to see the dog once. Plus, tracking Kurama while he was working not to be seen, though admittedly, at only the level required to elude a wild Ningenkai animal, was decent training, especially while trying to keep his kimono perfect, despite the snow, jagged branches, and brittle, dirty bark. They reached the tree where Hiei had first seen the dog's cave from, Hiei landing soundlessly in the bare branches, as high as he could get without being visible against the starry sky. Below him, Kurama ducked behind the thick trunk, tails lashing excitedly, as he peered towards the stream and cave. The dog was there, jumping about on the bank of the iced-over stream joyfully, in plain sight. But he wasn't alone. A man in shabby robes stood with him, turning as the dog bounced in circles around him. A faint puff of mist, and Yoko leapt silently to the branches just below Hiei, inexplicably managing to blend in despite his silvery coloring. "I can't tell," he murmured, voice just above a whisper. The raspy nature of whispering drew attention too easily. "But it may be the boy in the photograph."
"What boy?" Hiei asked. "What photograph?"
"Friend of Black and Potter, Lupin."
"The Lupin who taught DADA?"
Hiei asked.
Yoko nodded. "He'd know. He'd report you."
Remus Lupin had been the only good defense professor in Genkai's notes. He might know what a five-tailed fox was.
A pause.
"I want to get nearer. Get..." He tapped his nose.
Hiei glanced up. The moon was mere days from full. "You get that," Hiei said sternly, unable to think of a way to say his scent without syllables that would carry too far. "And the werewolf Lupin will too."
They might not know how strong an animagus's sense of smell was, but Hiei knew exactly how strong a werewolf's was. Shigure's library held no less than 6 different books on the medical aspects of the disease, and 3 on Reikai's work to catch and jail the demon scientist who created it. Not that it was relevant now.
"Maybe," Yoko replied. "Definitely. 1 more meter, maybe 2.
They could only get that much closer before Lupin would notice them in this cold, empty stretch of snowed underwoods. Under their watchful gazes, Lupin put a collar and leash on the dog. There was no reason for him to do that, unless the two were going to a wizard settlement tonight. The man and dog blinked from sight, operating somewhere. Gold and false black eyes met, bright with identical deductions. The dog was Harry's friend. The nearest wizard settlement was Hogsmeade, and Harry just happened to be there tonight for the holiday.
"This was a waste of time, Fox," Hiei said. Yoko just grinned. They were going back to Hogsmeade.
The bell above the door to Honeydukes jingled.
Sir, you can't bring your dog in here,"
the man behind the register said, hurrying out from behind the counter. A familiar voice answered him, causing Harry to stop in his tracks.
"I won't be long," Professor Lupin said. "I just wanted to stop in long enough to check something."
Harry dropped his basket of candies on the floor, hurrying toward the front of the store.
"Headmaster, there you are. I was wondering..."
Of course," Dumbledore's voice was cheery, though slightly muffled, as if he hadn't quite finished his current piece of candy. Harry squeezed past a wide-eyed second year, who was staring up at the shelves of candy in unabashed awe, and popped out into the front area of the store.
Remus," he said. "Snuffles!"
Remus grinned. "Happy New Year, Harry, Ron, Hermione." He shook Padfoot's red leash. "Say hello, Snuffles." Snuffles sat and offered his paw out in the universal doggy shake trick, his tongue lolling. Harry smiled, taking the paw. Snuffles slipped it from his grip and batted at Harry's hair.
"You guys go outside," Hermione said. "I'll pay and be right out."
Harry followed Remus's glance to Dumbledore. The headmaster waved towards the street.
"I would hardly have invited you here just to keep you apart, but I do believe Snuffles is worrying Mr. Bannock. He is eyeing that vat of chocolate just a bit too eagerly, don't you think?"
Remus's eyes gleamed. "No, Snuffles," he said mock sternly, before turning back to Dumbledore. "We'll just be outside then." He pushed the door back open, gesturing to Harry. "Harry? Ron?
How much of that potion did you take?"
Hiei asked, perched in the shadows of the Shrieking Shack's chimneys, next to Yoko.
"How much longer are we stuck here before we can slip back into town?"
"Barely a sip," Yoko answered, gaze pinned to the sprinkle of golden lights that was Hogsmeade. "Just enough to get to and from the cave, with about 10 minutes extra to look around."
"Good. That meant they could go in another couple of minutes."
"How far do we need to stay from the werewolf?"
"As far as possible."
With the crowd and the masking odors of the town, a street's width, Hiei replied, calculating quickly. Another half that by dawn. He paused, thinking of something. That assumes he would recognize what he was smelling, he admitted. He would know, Kurama said glumly. Hiei glanced at him. The voice was back, the kimono was back, the ears and tail were gone, but the hair was still shot through with silver, though that was vanishing quickly. He's sure to have smelled fox before, if not fox demon. Everybody knows there's no one with a pet fox at Hogwarts. Which wouldn't be enough excuse for smelling that much of fox anyway, Hiei knew. And there was no excuse for himself or Yukina. And Kurama's hair was completely red again. With Kurama finished shifting back to his human self, they leapt off the roof and snuck back into town, passing a few stores, staying to the shadows. The two of them were nearly to Honeydukes when Hiei stopped short and shoved Kurama into a dark nook behind a rainspout. Harry had just stepped from the candy store, next to the werewolf and the dog. His face was bright with joy, easily visible in the lamplight shining from the windows, though the moon had just slid behind a large cloud. Ron followed on his heels, grinning around a lollipop. They moved a meter or so closer to Hiei and Kurama's hiding place, moving out of the line of traffic. "N't believe you're here," Harry said, as they moved just within Demon, earshot. "I thought you were staying under Fide..." "Shh," Rima said quickly. "The place I'm staying at is, that's all. I haven't been further than the corner market for months." He quirked a grin. "Poor Snuffles here has been climbing the walls of his kennel all day." There was a strange emphasis on the word kennel to Hiei's ears. It sounded like a code word or a euphemism of some sort, most likely a substitute for the word cave, and it didn't escape him that Lupin was speaking of himself in the singular. He and Snuffles were living in different places then. "Interesting," Kurama murmured, breath tickling Hiei's ear. "Did I tell you I think the dog's a fugitive?" Hiei leaned back slightly, tilting his head towards Kurama's to make it easier for the fox to hear him. "You didn't." That meant Dumbledore had to know about the dog, and Harry's association with it. Otherwise, it would be too risky for the dog to come into town. "Raises questions, doesn't it?" The fox's voice was bright with curiosity. If he'd been in fox form, Hiei would bet money that he'd be licking his chops. "I want answers." "You always want answers, puzzle-loving thief." Hermione dashed from the shop, beaming and loaded down with a large bag, and joined the small group. "Happy Hogmanay, Professor Remus," she said happily, scratching the dog's head. "Happy Hogmanay, Hermione," he replied. "How's my favorite old student?"
"Hey!"
Ron and Harry chorused. Snuffles winked at them. "I'm doing great. Defense this year is wonderful. There's so much more work, all sorts of extra tutoring, and we're learning about demons. And it's so good to have another professor who knows what they're talking about." "Now you've gone and gotten her started," Ron Muck grumbled. Snuffles flopped onto Remus's foot in a very put-upon attitude for a dog, echoing Ron's sentiment. "But he's not a dog," Hiei thought. "Eloquent for a mutt. Very experienced at being a dog." Remus ignored it. "I certainly don't have to ask how you're doing in classes," he said. "Top grades in everything but potions, correct?" Hermione nodded. "But it's not entirely unfair this year," she said, a strange mix of indignation and relief in her voice. "The new Slytherin is honestly good at potions."
"Not that honestly," Kurama murmured into Hiei's ear. "A 1,000 years experience with mixing my plants and adding animal bits and stewing isn't hard."
"Severus must be delighted. My condolences." "Not entirely delighted," Hermione replied, mouth curving into a wicked little smile. "Mina Mino's best friend is a Gryffindor." Snuffles woofed gleefully, tail wagging, and Remus shoved him into the snow with his foot. "Be nice," he chided, failing to stifle a smile. "I have more questions that this lunkhead," he nudged Snuffles again,
would never think to ask, "Just how are Harry and Ron's grades?" The boy squawked in horror.
"Why, Remus," Hermione said sweetly, "you think I would rat on my friends?"
Remus shook his head. "That bad, hmm?"
"Can we talk about something else?" Ron asked plaintively, his face clearly unhappy under the reappearing moonlight. "We're having a killer Quidditch season."
He broke off as Lupin suddenly tensed and glanced around.
Remus?
"We're being watched."
Shit,
Hiei thought instinctively, and needlessly, glancing upwards at the moon. Kurama's hand tightened on his shoulder, tugging ever so slightly towards the rooftops. Hiei didn't bother to nod his understanding. He leapt, leaving a tiny burst of magic to melt the snow and erase their prints. The two of them scrambled silently over the roof, ran two buildings' length along the gutter on the far side, and landed in an empty alley. Hiei brushed an imaginary wrinkle from his hakama pants, and they melted into the crowds and entered the garden shop.
Damn werewolf.
"We're being watched," Remus said, eyes scanning the street. "Watched?" Harry thought, hand twitching towards his wand. But Remus shook his head, slowly relaxing. "It's gone."
"A reporter?" Hermione asked. "Or..."
"I can't tell." Remus pinched the bridge of his nose tiredly. "I don't think it was hostile, but there was something... The wolf's hard to interpret sometimes." Ron turned, staring warily at the street. "But you're sure it's gone?"
"Yes."
Harry wasn't entirely convinced, and the other two looked faintly dubious as well, but he let the subject drop. The Three Broomsticks was filled to the brim with students, professors, and townspeople, as the bells of Hogwarts began to sound. Well, Harry thought, one bell. A deep, solemn one, booming ponderously in the distance, magically enhanced to somehow carry to Hogsmeade, and still be heard faintly over the celebratory din. Particularly the group of men with huge mugs of beer over by the tap, who were singing loudly, happily, and only somewhat in key. Fortunately, the song didn't seem to be one that particularly required any specific key. A drinking song, if Harry guessed right. Though the words were probably being censored a bit. What wasn't being censored had Hermione blushing brightly as it was. The three of them, Remus and Snuffles, had found a table in a dim corner, where few people would be able to see the dog or Harry clearly. A round of hot spiced cider graced their table, along with a basket of oatcakes, and Madame Rose Myrta had placed a plateful of ground beef on the floor for Snuffles. The door swung open, and Kuwabara set Yukina inside, as carefully as if she were made of china. He followed, and they found the Tante table, and sat, two mugs of the eggnog-thick amakase stuff half of them were drinking appeared before them, tiny spoons of minced ginger balanced on the rim. The other half, Genkai Yusuke, Hiei, and Kurama, had funny-shaped ceramic bottles of some clear liquid. The other Tante tossed their cards onto the table, and Kurama scooped them up, dealing Kuwabara and Yukina into their game. As the men started up a different song, this one louder, but in better harmony, the crowd shifted. A pair of older wizards conjured up a fiddle and a flute, and began to play counterpoint to the drinkers' rowdy tune. The crowd shifted, and a large expanse of floor space cleared opposite the fire. Couples spread into the space, now visibly a dance floor. Newlyweds, older couples, relatives. A father spinning a giggling, pigtailed toddler in his arms. A pre-Hogwarts girl on the edge of the crowd trying to teach her younger sister. A pair of 40-something siblings, nearly identical except for gender. Dumbledore and McGonagall. Harry looked away as Yusuke plopped down at their table, slightly red in the face. He set one of the funny-shaped bottles down next to the cider.
Akamashite, he said, the strange word slurred. Omedetou gozaimasu.
Harry blinked at him, but Remus nodded politely. And a happy new year to you, too. Yusuke, are you drunk? Hermione asked. Yusuke blinked.
Yeah, it's just sake. Mild as mother's milk and all that.
Keiko appeared behind Yusuke as if by magic. Don't believe a word of that, she told them. He has no sense of scale. Sake is about 30 proof.
30?
Yusuke, what are you doing over here anyway? Keiko asked. I thought we all agreed not to bother them.
Yusuke jiggled the bottle. It's not right that they don't get to have any.
Yusuke! Keiko plucked the bottle from his grasp, bowing mostly towards Remus. Excuse us, please. She dragged Yusuke up from the chair and away. Britain has underage laws. As she pulled Yusuke back to her own table, the music stopped. A large clock, glowing in fire writing, appeared over the mantel. The hand pointed to 11:59. The second hand ticked to 49, drawing a single second of attentive quiet over the crowd. It ticked again. 10! Dumbledore turned the ceiling of the pub clear. 9! Headmaster! Rose Merta yelled. 8! Only a 5-minute charm, madam, I promise. 7!
Shichi!
Yusuke called instead. 6! Keiko poked him. English, Yusuke? 5! Snuffles sat up, putting a heavy paw onto Harry's shoulder. 4! Hermione edged closer to Ron. 3! Yukina leaned against Kuwabara, smiling. 2! Unseen by anybody, Kurama's hand slipped into Hiei's. 1! Happy New Year! Snuffles licked Harry from chin to ear.
Ack, Snuffles!
Remus burst out laughing. Fireworks exploded, glittering dragons and comets zooming across the sky, showering bright light in all the colors of the rainbow over Hogsmeade. The bells from Hogwarts fell silent, and the pub burst into song. Should old acquaintance be forgot? And never brought to mind, should all acquaintance be forgot, and the days of auld lang syne. 5 minutes of sentimentally charged silence filled the pub once the song was finished. Then,
another round, Rosmerta!